Welcome to episode 209 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Sports Where I Am co-founder Matt Scully about solving the hassles sports tourists face.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who has a bucket list to visit every sports stadium around the world, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callinan, and you're listening to Sports Geek. You might be doing so on sportsgeekhq.com, our website, or you might be doing it on your favorite podcast platform, or potentially Roku. Let us know. Let us know where you listen, what platforms you use to listen. And very apt, DJ Joel's intro there of my bucket list of visiting every sporting stadium in the world, because my guest this week is from Sports Where I Am, sportswhereiam.com. It's a sports travel startup and a neighbour of mine here at Creative Cubes in Richmond in Melbourne, Australia. So constantly catch up with the boys. They're only a few doors down here at Creative Cubes and talking about their business, what they're doing, how it's growing, obviously targeting similar fans and customers that you might be doing at sports teams and leagues and stadiums. So I thought it was an interesting discussion to sort of take some of the conversations that I have with Matt Scully, who is the CEO and co-founder of Sports Ram, and Ben, who's his brother and head of content, have some of those conversations. You can talk to and chat with both of Matt and Ben Scully in Sports Geek Nation. You can send them a message. Maybe it should be a bit of a thread that we have in the ticketing channel in Sports Geek Nation. If you are a member, if you're not, you can obviously become a member by going to sportsgeeknation.com and join in the conversation with people like Matt and Ben Scully. So here is my chat with the guys from sportswhereiam.com, Matt and Ben Scully. Very happy to be here in the offices of Sports Geek here at Creative Cubes. And I'm joined by a couple of my neighbours here at Creative Cubes from Sports Where I Am, Matt Scully, the CEO and co-founder of Sports Where I Am, and also Ben Scully, head of content at Sports Where I Am. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks great for having
to be
us.
Here. We knew this would be here,
you know. Thank you for the commute. How was it?
So yeah, we beat the traffic to get here from two offices down.
Yeah. So yeah, for those who don't know, we're co-tenants, a couple of offices apart, and we regularly catch up.
We've been stalking Sean really for the last 12 months.
Popping in for free advice and stuff. Yeah. So hypothetically, what would you do in this situation?
Yeah. So, and occasionally I get people who come to see Sports Ram and they stop at my office because there's more swag.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. We often sometimes just say this is our office when you're not here.
Yeah. So, first of all, before we get into the, I guess, the backstory and how you got here and that kind of stuff, give us the bit of the 140 character, the Twitter version, or I guess I'll give you 280 characters now on Twitter. What is Sports Where I Am?
Yeah, no, thank you. So basically we help travellers get to sporting events around the world. Through the Sports Where I Am website and mobile app, users can find games, buy tickets, and get all the best local advice for maximising that game experience when they go to the game. So some of that information includes best bars to go to, how to get to and from the stadium, you know, which food to get when you get there, where to sit. So it's basically an all-in-one solution for the traveling sports fan.
Yep. So that's, you know, so to do the proper pre-announced stuff. So that's sportswhereiam.com.
Yep, sportswhereiam.com. The app's available, obviously, on both Android and iOS.
Yep.
So sportswhereiam.com is the go-to spot.
So if you're traveling and, you know, pretty much where the name comes from,
yep.
It's like you're traveling, what sports are on where I am.
Absolutely.
That's pretty much where the name came from. And because, you know, as someone who travels a lot and you're like, oh, I'm going to go to Dallas, Philadelphia, New York, Washington.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, hang on, what games are on? Previously you would have had to go to an NBA site, an NFL site, an NHL site. And so you're that's the initial pitch point of what Sports Ram is?
That was the genesis of the idea, I guess. Yep. So myself and Adrian Gale, we've been mates since high school.
Yep.
We went for a trip to New York. It was in 2012 now with our now wives. And we did everything that a sports fan would do going to a new city. You know, we sought out what games were on. We looked to buy tickets. We bought merchandise. You know, we got the subway to and from Madison Square Garden because we thought that was the real way of doing it. We went to sports bars close by. You know, we bought the biggest foam hands we could, and you know, the beer cups and the big hot dog jumbo dogs. And
is it like, as someone who's traveled a lot, you can spot tourists and especially Australians at sporting events because they're the ones collecting the souvenir tourist cups. I've still got
five of them at home still.
Yeah, I've still got like there's one over there, a Rangers plastic beer cup. And you know, the tourists will bring that back, whereas someone who's local is like, well, we get that they're there every week.
Exactly. Exactly right. So. So that was the original idea, exactly how you described it. We went to a new city. We were unfamiliar with the process. We were a bit skeptical about buying tickets and, you know, were we buying fake merchandise? And, you know, we were really interested in getting that genuine local experience. And we found the whole process surprisingly difficult, you know, to your point around, you know, you've got to go to 10 different sites. We thought that would be somewhat... You know, it sounds really simple, you know, that you
and can so go what was and, what was so in you know startup what was V1, what was the starting point of what it is, because you know we're now multiple years down the track.
Yeah,
what was V1, what did that look like?
So it was we basically came back from that trip and I think
well, and apologies, there's someone being shot. I don't know what's happening next door, but we'll continue on.
That didn't happen when we came back from the trip. So we basically came back from that trip, and we do what most people do with a new idea. We got excited about it and started telling friends and family, and and we started to get a lot of positive feedback from it.
So it was a common problem with people saying, "Hey, yeah, that's the same problem I had. I wanted to do that, and it was difficult." And so that's where it started.
Everyone was kind of like, "Surely that exists. Like, surely that's there. That someone's doing that." Couldn't find it.
And it's it's a really different problem for a traveler versus a local. You know, like that was the key distinction to be made, was that it wasn't just for us. You know, just going to the Carlton game. It's a lot different process to actually go to a new city or a new country and understand all of the processes behind that.
So how did it start?
Yeah, so we were still working full-time jobs. Myself and Adrian Gale, we started, trying to work out how this was going to evolve.
Yep.
So we were still working full-time jobs.
What type of role were you in?
Worked at Nestle at the time, just in like a commercial, I think it was a national account manager or something role at the time. So basically on the, overnight and the weekends, et cetera, we would, get together and, map out what it would look like. And, we then, both Adrian and I haven't got a technical bone in our body, so we realized that we needed to outsource it at the time. So we found someone here locally, and initially there was a lot of, manual element to what we were doing. So we were like inputting a lot of the event data manually.
Yep.
Or, there's a lot of data entry behind it.
So you're building out this site that's got all of the different events and providing that, I guess, that single view of as many events as possible.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. And initially it was, we didn't know any better, and we were excited, just wanted to get started. And so initially it was, we were doing the process ourselves by going onto Google, looking at all the different places that we would, trying to consolidate it all down. And then there'd be some manual element of simplifying that whole process.
Yep.
So that was how the original site came about. So I think that was in 2014. So I think we might have had the trip 2012. We're still working full-time jobs, doing little bits on the side. And then in 2014, the initial website went live.
Yep.
And so I think the initial website was US only. So it was just purely US.
And was it just So were you? Could you buy tickets on that first site?
Yeah, so you could buy tickets, but it was flicking off to a partner site. So yep. We were working with people in the US.
So your initial point was, hey, we're establishing these partnerships, but building out a site to make it easy to find.
Yep.
And to, I guess, make it a bit more of a seamless experience.
Exactly, yeah. Yep. So that whole simplification of what's on at a location was our main driver coming back from that. But also we had – you could buy tickets by flicking off to a link, but, you know, from the start we've always had an element of that local information. So yep. For us, when we think about our trip, we had the tickets were obviously a major part. There was the whole experience of – the sports bars around the stadium, buying the merchandise, getting to and from. We from the start, and it's been probably in different forms. Yeah. We've always had that element as well. It hasn't just been tickets.
So you're sort of in that blogging content space. It's just sort of where you come in, Ben, with sort of part Yelp, part, hey, these are all the options around, because that's another part of, okay, now we're going to New York. What are the things we need to do? And you're trying to give that local point of view.
Yeah, we kind of realized we had to be useful. We weren't going to last too long if we weren't providing something that was, people can get tickets elsewhere.
Yep.
We felt like it was a huge benefit listing by location, and we still do, but it's sort of specific for travelers to be able to look at a location rather than searching all the different teams in a location. We sort of from the get-go realized we had to, answer some of the questions, or in the same way that the first idea came from Maddie and Age realizing surely there's a solution to this, we sort of started making a note of here's all the questions we have now about what we're hearing about overseas sports events. And that's where some of the blogs.
Because you're sort of coming in like after the blogging craze.
Yeah.
Like there was that, 2006 to 2010, 12 was bloggers, hey, become a blogger.
Yeah.
And initially you probably would have thought, oh, cool, we'll do a sports travel blog kind of piece that says, oh, this is the opportunities, but sort of the goalposts moved a little bit where the traffic moved.
Absolutely.
And so, but the thing is, producing that type of content means people are still searching for it. Like, what bars? How do I get a ticket?
There are a few people who have I'm going to review every stadium on my trip type thing. So for us to try and differentiate a bit from that and have them be more generally applicable for people when they're going on a trip, say, yep, how can I use these tips? Rather than, if it was just me, Maddie and Age traveling around to stadiums around the world, then, people would probably get tired of that. But but if it's like, here's the five things you can use from what we've seen, what we know, what other people have provided for us, then that was, we got a good response from that and built from there.
So Matt, so one of the things that interests me is, when starting a, startup and, side hustle, which Sports Ram was between yourself and Adrian. So how did you make the leap from, I'm in a really cool, I'm in a cushy, getting paid in a corporate role, working for Nestle, the salary always keeps coming in, I'm going to make the leap and make something of this?
Yeah.
How did that decision come about? How did it become more than a side hustle?
I think I always had aspirations of doing something. Didn't know what it was, but always had aspirations. I think the tipping point for this was, we had a lot of, as you said, the side hustle there was for a long time. And I think for me, the actual tipping point was I was speaking about another job to do there. And then it got to the point where it was like, I think there's only so many times I could race off to the meeting room and pretend I was talking about the meetings that were supposed to be going on at Nestle.
Yeah.
That were really, I was too excited about what was going on with Sports Where I Am.
Yeah.
So I think it got to a point where actually they started talking about the next role. And I think that's when
you sort of went, your heart's not in it.
Heart's not in it. I wanted to be upfront about it and just say, actually, this is where my heart is at the moment. And so that was actually, it was almost presented to me, if that makes sense. It wasn't like, right, this is it, making
and
a call.
And so
it was,
you're effectively, doing that side hustle because you've got the ticketing, it's got, you're bootstrapping everything at the minute.
Yep.
It's just.
Adrian and I, that's right. We're just,
you're doing it half-half.
Yep.
getting devs in.
Yep.
You've got some ticketing revenue in. So you're saying, well, it's just, you know, it's
yep.
if we can move the graph, if we can get more users, if we yep. can sell more tickets, like
yep.
those kind of things.
For sure, yeah.
Then did you go through what, you know, probably more traditional startups of investment and that kind of stuff? What was that?
Yeah, so I think so. Yes, so initially it was, we were myself and Adrian were bootstrapping pretty much everything half half.
Yep.
And then at that point that you mentioned, when I then quit my full time job, or had some sort of runway, I think, for saying, right, I'm going to finish here, and this yep. is the reason why. And that was fantastic as well that they let me do that too. So that yep. was really, really lucky in that sense. And then. Yeah, so we had a little bit of money left, but it was still, I think, having that knowledge, we then stockpiled a little bit.
Yep.
Knowing what was coming, and the fact that, like, as you said, wage coming in every month to then nothing.
Yeah.
And I think as much as you prepare for it, that first day when it doesn't come in, it's pretty confronting, actually.
Yeah. Because it is funny when you go to like a networking event, and there's like an entrepreneur's networking event, and there's, you know, people in corporate life who want to do their own thing.
Yeah.
A mate of mine calls them corporate escapologists, yeah. right? Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. trying to escape the cubicle. Go, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is going to be great. And one of the first questions that, you know, I sort of asked, I had the room sort of split in two, and I said, who wants to, you know, start their own thing? And half the room said yes. And I said, who has already started that thing? And the other room, half the room said, yeah, we've started our own thing. And so it's like, how many people are earning more money since they've left, and there was no hands on the right side of the room.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, that's real, you know, that's a reality.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a, you know, there's a slog in front of you.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, there's not, you know, it's not everyone just puts on a hoodie and becomes Mark Zuckerberg.
I do have a hoodie on right now.
Yeah, we all got hoodies on right now just to stay on brand.
Yeah.
So from an investment point of view, did you talk to VCs? Was it families? You know,
yeah.
How did that process work for you guys?
I think I got some really good advice. So that was around, I think, end of 2014, started 2015. And my wife and I actually went on our honeymoon. So it was around that time, quit job, went on a honeymoon, everything yep. was going yep.
just,
you know,
put big
fantastic.
Life events in,
yeah,
in,
yeah,
in all together. One hit. Yeah.
So that was all fantastic. And then I actually was really lucky to get some good advice from a guy named Rod Cuthbert, who yep. Was a founder of a company called Viator.
Yep.
And he's a Melbourne guy. Obviously, Viator was sold to TripAdvisor in 2014.
Okay.
They do tours and activities at a destination. So it's yep. a similar sort of premise to what we wanted to do, but it was obviously
different,
replace
vertical.
Sporting events.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and he was, I'll never forget, it was, you know, so what sort of business are you doing here? Oh, you know, what's the medium? It's like a website app. Right. So what's your technical background?
Yeah.
I don't have any.
Yeah.
Right. So who's looking after you? Who's looking after that side? Right. You know,
yeah.
There we go. First thing, you need to get someone who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
He then introduced me to Jordan Digby, who's now our CTO.
Yep.
And at the time, he was the founding CTO of Viator. Someone with incredible experience.
Yep.
Done this whole thing before. Obviously got Viator to a point from idea to where it is
yep.
today. So then basically we, so that was really good advice, but then basically it meant we had to start all over again.
Yep.
Because he looked at what we had and said, yeah, okay, I can see what you're trying to do, but there's no way you can scale that. And you know, there's got to be a better way of doing it. So that was, you know, we thought.
So it was about
that
getting
point,
that structure right and getting the right people involved.
Absolutely.
That,
yeah.
that said, he's now the plan going forward.
Yeah.
The plan going forward is going to cost X.
Yep.
And it was pretty much back to you, go raise X or go
exactly.
get that money.
Yep. Yeah. So at that point we realized, you know, so I was out of a job.
Yep.
You know, the money that we'd stockpiled was quickly vanishing. You know, it was tough actually, because, you know, I think now looking back at it, we thought that this was the time that we were going to start to scale what we'd built.
Yeah, because you were going with that bootstrapping. It's like, if we just do more, you know, we put more time into it,
yeah.
I won't have a full-time job. I've got another 40 hours of my week.
Yeah.
That should be yeah, get growth, but
yeah.
growth means more revenue.
Yeah.
We'll be fine. We'll just keep bootstrapping.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember coming back from that meeting with Di, my wife, and she said, how did it go? And I was like, oh, we've got to start all over again. Yeah. You know, I was really like the initial feeling was actually quite flat.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, it ended up being the best advice they could have got at the time. Introduced to Jordan, and then luckily enough, Jordan wanted to become part of the team. And then at that point, we literally the plan was to start again.
Yep.
You know, and so we pitched what we wanted, the idea for Jordan, and he was really confident that that's something that he could help us with. And at that point, we then had to raise some initial money, and that was initially from family, really. Yep. So there was and friends and family. Sorry, so some of it came from a family member, and some of it came from you know, like a close friend of mine at that time.
And so the idea and the business concept was still solid, and they'd been put some, you know, some rigor around that and been challenged on revenue and those kind of things.
Yeah.
But the tech architecture and the ability to scale, that was a bit that needed work.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think everyone got it.
Yep.
But I think just the way that we were executing it at the time had limits.
Yep.
And I think we were going to hit a ceiling really quickly if we hadn't have done that. So I remember it was hard though to make that call of like literally. Yeah, at that time we thought we'd done a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, but we were doing it on the side and, you know, bits and pieces here and there. And there was nothing wrong with what we had. Like, I think the solution was good. It was just there was a lot of manual handling. It was going to take a lot to scale. And, you know, I think we were outsourcing the tech as well. Whereas, you know, now it's night and day.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember the advice that Rod gave was it's hard to be able to speak that language if you don't understand it too. So if you're speaking to someone to say what you want, it's a lot different as a marketing salesperson to do it as opposed to if a tech person is describing, right, we need this, this, and this.
Especially with outsourced teams, you know, and I've worked with a few different founders that, similar to yourself, that don't have the tech background, and I've got like the geek background, and I can say, have you asked them this, this, and this? And you're like, no.
It's
and there could be big gaps. And so, you know, having that someone in-house technically, even if you're still using outsourced talent, you still need someone to be able to translate that and at least own what you're doing internally.
Yeah. And Jordan's brought not just his experience but some other fantastic team members now that he's worked with in the past that there's just no way that we would have found them otherwise.
Yeah.
So, that advice has been really, really good.
So how long did it take from Jordan coming on board saying, hey, here's the plan to here's the vision, you know, here's the next version.
Yeah,
how long did that process take?
It was about another year.
Yeah.
So that was really, really hard, and you know, sort of lean times on limited money, and so that was probably maybe a bit less than a year, but maybe 10, 11 months. And at that point,
a full like redesign of the logo, website, everything. So it was sort of all done in one go. It wasn't just improving the service; it was also
so there's a whole bunch of stuff being done back end, front end. There's redesign, logo stuff, and then the other. Because you're not technical. The other stuff you're doing is trying to get in all these partnerships and fill out the, I guess, the money side of the business.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so.
And so that's a tough one because you're setting up all of these deals that once you turn on the new website, the money can flow. But it's like.
Yeah, we're selling the future with looking at the present.
Yeah.
That was difficult. You know, but I think as you said before, the concept is still consistent. It was just the execution of it. So I think once we started to get to the point of wireframes and then, you know, mock-ups and all that sort of stuff really helped.
Yep.
So I think, the original – the website and the app was then – so we didn't have an app prior to that too.
Yep.
So we launched the app at the same time. And that was in, 2016. So basically where we are today is – We feel like that was, you know, Mark II from where it was.
So you've got all the architecture in,
and
now it's a matter of all that business development pieces of, you know, connecting all the different pieces from a monetization point of view, better providers, making sure you can sell tickets in different markets, all of that kind of stuff. That's
exactly.
Pretty much your focus now.
Yeah. So still 2016 when we launched the website, it was purely US, Canada.
Yep.
Initially, it was still flicking off to partner sites to complete the transaction. Then from, 2016 to where we are now, we're now in 28 different countries around the world, 240 cities. We've built our own booking engine. So now it's a consistent process for people to buy tickets to an event in the US.
Yeah, so it's
or
not a disjointed
Canada.
Experience of, cool, I'm buying this ticket, and you end up on another ticket site.
Exactly.
It all stays in, you know, the whole process stays in your ecosystem.
Exactly, yeah. So it's a lot more consistent process no matter where you're purchasing tickets from across those 28 countries. So it's, yeah, we've evolved a lot and obviously still kept the element of all of the information that we provide around the event, you know, like
community,
parking and where to sit, et cetera. I think in that time, a lot of the work that Ben's done, particularly in the last 12 months, is around pushing that message out in various forms of content around this is the best way to maximize that game experience as a traveler.
Yep.
So we've really pushed that message out.
And that's the stuff that you've got access to, Ben, because a lot of the experiences you're selling are bucket list item experiences that people automatically want to share. So it becomes a real positive thing for you to say, because normally if you're, you know, because you're a sports travel company, you know, and some, you know, people like I might book my flights, I don't, but, you know, with Flight Center or travel, I'm not going back to them and saying, thanks, I had a great trip.
Whereas, it was really smooth, thanks.
You've got something that's like, hey, I'm in the end zone at a Packers game and this is what I've talked about forever.
Yep.
There's a natural, you know, natural tribe that you're developing of all these people that are part of it that you can sort of tap into.
And it was something we probably, I don't know, skipping ahead a bit in the timeline, but we realized in the last few months is that it's a lot more engaging for us to use photos of people at sports events than polished like stock photos of, you know, a city skyline or an empty stadium that looks really artistic.
Yep.
For us to have a photo that might be, you know, slightly less quality in terms of, you know.
It's called Instagram filters, Ben.
Instagram filters, So we found that we were asking people, is it okay if we use this photo? And then people started sending me, I'm like, are you kidding? Like, please show people I've been here. And so now we're filling out our cities and we're replacing images with ones that people are sending us.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more.
It's social proof.
Yeah.
Completely. It's not, is this just another, you know, aggregator?
Yeah.
Right? You want to be more than that. You want to be a community. And the good thing is you know, you've got these fans. Tourists that they're going to brag about, you know, everyone's going to say, hey, look at me, this is the game I'm at. And then the natural next question is, how did you get those tickets? You know,
for sure.
And so you're really doubling down on the service aspect, the community aspect to say, how can we make sure you have this awesome experience?
And it's probably something that we realized we couldn't compete with huge companies on highlights and stuff like that. We can't be in all the sports and all the cities and all the leagues that we have in the service, we can't be constantly, you know, live tweeting or dropping comments or anything like that or memes or anything like that about all the games that are happening that we're selling tickets to. But when people come back to us and say, hey, I had a really good experience, this is something I've always wanted to do and I did it, and we show that to our you know, building community, then people get really pumped about that. And people, as you said, people are pumped to share it, and then other people are happy to see it, and they'd, it's a validator. It's like, okay, I've seen that it's worked for someone else. I can go through these guys. I can trust them. And, yeah, it's been really valuable for us.
So who are your core, like, audience and customers? Because you've started as an Aussie company to say, hey, this is how we can get you to US games and, NBA and NFL, that kind of stuff. And then you've opened up Europe. What's the sort of demographic of the people that are coming along?
So I know this is probably a really broad answer, but it's the travel. And I think this is obviously what sets us apart as well. And we talk about why us, but we really focus on that traveler and that travel occasion and everything that goes around that.
Yep.
So I think when we first started, we thought that there'd be, you know, a really high skew of males, 25 to 30 going on trips.
Yep.
We've been surprised it hasn't just been. I mean, there's certainly an element of that.
Yep.
But then there's a lot of families that are going over. There's, you know, I think the skew of male and female is a lot closer than what we thought as well. The split. I think
Sarah's really helped with that as well. Sarah's produced a lot of videos for us over the last 12 months, and I think having a female voice in there has probably helped balance out the male to female ratio now.
And it's just, I think there's a whole side of, you know, if you're a sports fan, obviously that this is interesting, but also if you're a traveler and you want to have a really local, genuine experience, you know, we say that this is a lot more authentic than, you know, the Eiffel Tower or, you know, ones where all the tourists are at. And this, you know, this is where locals are going every week.
Yep.
So if you're looking at having a local experience. So we also tap into that side too, probably more than what we originally thought when we started. And I think, you know, to your point, we're an Australian business, you know, and Aussies love to travel. You know, there's 2.6 million trips that Aussies make overseas each year to see a sporting event.
Yep.
So
and we have to travel because we're so far away. Everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And hello to my friends in the US and Europe.
Yeah, so they, you know, absolutely, you know, it's a big opportunity for, but we've, our aspirations are, you know, worldwide. If people are traveling all over and to see sporting events, we want to make sure that that's our aspiration, is that we're helping all of those people.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think you opening up the European market is, you know, is key because you know, you're moving, you know, going from Italy to France or,
so much
Denmark
more,
or whatever.
Yeah,
the same problem still exists. They just don't have to travel as far as Australians.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's really complicated over there too. So trying to simplify that process is a really big, really big challenge for us.
Well, that was one of the things I wanted to ask. So, like, you know, I've got experience, you know, in the US market and sort of knowing how the, you know, the ticketing process works. And when someone says to me, "Oh, how do I get tickets?" I'm like, I just go to SportsRam, use the code SportsGeek. You know, that's like my mate Daz. He said, "I'm taking my kids. We're going to the States, and this is the time we're going to go."
Yeah.
And I've got to take all my kids. And he's got like 4 or 5 kids. I don't know. He should have stopped ages ago. He's got too many kids. But he's like, "I've got to go to all the sessions." I'm like, cool. Get an NBA game in it. You know,
fantastic.
That's where it fit. You know, that's where it fits. But yeah, I'm interested in. But when I've been in Europe and tried to, you know, looked at tickets and that kind of stuff, you know, I think I'd tell it, well, when I went and saw Real Madrid, like, I'm like, you know, same scenario.
Yep.
How do I get tickets to Real Madrid?
Yep.
And you sort of find some websites and, again, multilingual, right? So you're finding some English. You might find a blog. I ended up just going up to the ticket counter and there was a ticket,
right?
And I bought a ticket, but it was more fortuitous than than anything else. And then, you know, you're in, again, remember in Barca, there's people there selling tickets like along the, and you're like, are they scalpers?
Exactly,
or,
yeah,
you know. And so that's exactly the market that.
Yeah.
And so what's the what's the difference from your point of view of the European market and the US market from a ticketing point of view?
It's a lot more. There's a lot less structure. Excuse me. So there's, you know, I think it differs so much by country.
Yep.
And also the means are quite different. So I think in the if we compare the US, Canada to Europe, for example, you know, there's a lot more e-tickets. There's a lot more mobile entry tickets.
Yep.
There's, you know, you can see all the developments going on there. Whereas in Europe, it's still a lot of it is you know, delivery to your hotel and more physical tickets.
And there's still, and there's membership type of stuff.
Yeah, like the EPL is a whole nother ball game in itself, obviously, with how that works. But yeah, I'd just say it's a lot more complicated as a really simplistic answer. And it's not something that, you know, the delivery methods is one thing. There's all of the different, so like for an Italian game, you need to make sure that you bring your passport to check, you know, whereas other European countries, you don't need to do that.
Okay.
The EPL is obviously, they're really strict around secondary tickets and making sure that, you know, you're buying. So for us, for example, we only have the hospitality events in for EPL because that's something that's allowed. You know, it's different again, as you say, from Barcelona. So that's where we really want to be able to add our value. So we do all that hard work and all of that research for.
So whether it's doing a partnership with the team, doing a partnership with the stadium, doing a partnership with
a ticket supplier,
you work on those deals to make it easy for you to go click.
And it's got to be trustworthy. You know, it's got to be something that. So we do all that work to make sure that it's a really simple process so you can avoid that. You know, and I think for us, if you know, and some of the research that we've had around sporting events are trip makers. So basically, people will buy their ticket to the event.
I don't know why they keep popping balloons next door, but we'll continue on.
people will buy a ticket to the event before they buy their flight and accommodation and everything else to make sure that they know that they're going. So it's a really important thing for us to get right. And you know, at the moment, we're servicing the majority of Australians who are traveling, as you say before, you know, minimum 14, 15 hours on a flight, a lot more when you go to Europe. So we got to make sure that we're providing a trustworthy process and a simple process for them, because it's a big thing to.
And so, and for the most part, it is, hey, I'm going to be in LA. Oh, LeBron's in LA now. I want to see LeBron when he's in town, right?
Yep.
And you can help facilitate that. How much of it is that regular, hey, I want to see a regular season game, I want to see this, to I want to go, you know, I want to go to the Super Bowl, I want to go to a big Champions League final or semi, like, do you handle those type of requests as well?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real mix. I think our concept is more based on the travel location. Yep. So I know I'm going to Los Angeles, bang, what sports are on. But, you know, we've also get inquiries around Super Bowl, Champions League final.
Yep.
So it's a real mix. I think the way that we've set up the business is more probably for the
every day. I'm booking and I'm going to be in Seattle at this time. When's the Seahawks playing? How do I get a ticket?
Look at all the events that are on.
That's your 95% of your business ticking over.
Exactly. But then, we certainly, when the requests come in for things like the Super Bowl or Champions League, All-Star Games, some of those really big events, we still do provide options for as well.
So because you're plugged into the ticketing industry, as you sort of said before, we're seeing the US market really adopt technology and seeing where technology goes, you know, where you've got Major League Baseball that are doing the full e-ticket and, you know, at the ballpark app, and that's how they want to do it, and it's a bit of a data capture play. Like, what are some of the ticketing trends you're seeing globally?
So I think there's the medium for entry is you know, always improving, as you say, like around mobile tickets, e-tickets, et cetera. I think on a broader sense, there's a bit more of a, in my opinion, the distribution channels are widening as well, and there's a bit more of a blurring of a traditional primary versus secondary. I think now there's, as the availability increases and the distribution channels
change,
I think that people are getting their tickets now not just from one or two different sources.
Yep.
So I think that's a really good thing for, in my opinion, consumers, because that gives them a lot more options and a lot more availability to purchase tickets on not just your primary, you know, a very select number of tickets.
Yep.
You got to be here. And particularly for travelers who, you know, if it's a really big ticket game and there's, okay, tickets will go on sale on X time, then that could be 3 a.m. in the morning for us here.
Yeah.
And, you know, you may need to have a local address, et cetera, which is just not something that travelers can do, and you can't compete with that.
Yeah.
So I think if the availability continues to increase, I think that's a really good thing for choice and for consumers, and I hope it happens more here as well.
And I think the other thing is that you've got the shifting focus of teams, like from season ticket membership, right? And so they're selling a lot of those, and we're seeing things like the, you know, the Netflix style buy a pass and go to any games that the Braves launch. It's a different ticketing product. There's also the discussion of no shows being a real problem in sports, like in college football scene and pretty much around the world, but there was a really good article on that was shared in the Sports Geek Nation Slack, like that. And, you know, no-shows are a big issue, you know, and so how does
the World Cup this year, you know, talking about that, I couldn't believe that the World Cup would have no-shows. So
so that being, you know, so do teams then start focusing on selling more mini-game packages? Or they focus on single-game packages? You know, I think, you know, if you look at locally, Melbourne United's done a really good job of selling a lot of tickets, single game tickets, to get more people to go to the games and not have as much focus on memberships to get more people going through the gate.
Yeah.
You know, and not have a fuller stadium more often.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the mentality of, oh, we'll have our season ticket holders or our members all, you know, and be really pleased with our big membership numbers. If they're not showing up, it's not good for anyone.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think there's a lot more choice now for customers, and I think that's, you know, what you guys help, you know, offer.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really big and a continuing shift, and I think it's a good thing. If those channels continue to widen, I think that's a good thing for choice and for particularly for travellers.
And the thing is, one of the main issues for you guys from a tourist point of view is making sure that that experience works. So things like, you know, things that would have happened in the past and, you know, buying a ticket and realizing it's a fake ticket, not doesn't, you know, doesn't get you in and you've, you know, it ruins a, like I said, trip.
Exactly. You know, yeah.
It breaks a trip instead of making a trip.
Exactly. Yeah. No, there's, and we've spent a lot of time on that vetting process to make sure that, you know, we're only dealing with the top providers and that, that those scenarios don't happen.
Yep.
Because it is, you know, it's a, and we really feel grateful for, you know, the trust that people put in. There's obviously the travel aspect and there's the passion involved with going to a sporting event. So, you know, you're talking about two really passionate things that people are doing. You know, they're traveling maybe once a year and they're going to a sporting event. We make sure that, that it, what we try and provide is that they can have the best experience possible.
So from a marketing point of view, how do you target bucket list, you know, sports tourists?
Well,
like, the you know, to sort list, of say, yeah.
Yeah, the bucket, I wouldn't say that, that we would necessarily target the bucket list. I mean, we certainly don't.
Or sports tourists overall, to sort of say, like you just said, you know, people make their trip once a year or once every 2 years. It's not a, it's not, that's not the same as selling, you know, Lakers hoodies, right? You can say, hey, Lakers fans, hoodies. And you know, it's a transaction that's going to happen every now and again. How do you get the mix of, we want people to, you know, the brand wear this piece of, we want people to know about us. So when that purchasing decision comes, and this is a bit of creative cubes, hall, locker room, water cooler talk, because this is the stuff that we normally talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, well, how do you find those people?
Yeah, I think there's, we've broken it up in, we've tried to simplify it as much as possible, that there's the sports fans that aren't traveling. So that, and they're going to have an interest in what we're doing, but they, it might just be more around an awareness piece and I'll keep this in mind for when I am traveling.
Yep.
Then there's the traveler and we absolutely know that they're traveling now, but we don't know if they're a sports fan.
Yep.
So the, between those two, you know, really broad channels, that's where we try and operate.
I think there's,
I think
probably a, about 15 documents on each of our laptops where we've said, this is our target. These are our targets. These are our targets. But there was one of them where we had, there was the four. And again, it's expanding on those two where it was, there's the person who's planning a trip, the person who's currently on a trip, the person who is, will refer someone to our service, who'll see this and go, hey, I know someone who's on a trip, you've got this. And there's someone who's the expert, who's the Sean Callanan, hey, I'm going on a trip, I need your help.
Yep.
What should I do for sports? So, yeah, it's basically having those two or four, those perspectives in mind with the content that we're creating and putting out to try and pick up on each of those. So some of it will just be building an audience, and we know it's just building an audience for when the NFL schedule comes out.
Yep.
As I said, Sarah in the US doing a lot of NFL, going to a lot of NFL games last year, we noticed a big spike when the new NFL schedule came out. And we had a lot of those people coming back, and a lot of people who had, you know, engaged in that last year were coming back and looking for their tickets now. So yeah, it's a bit of that, and there's also some, you know, in the moment stuff we try to do, which is, you know, you can add a baseball game really is really cheap compared to some baseball games.
Really cheap. But it is, I mean, it is that, like, that that planning phase, because you know, when someone sits down and go, yeah, we are going to travel 14 hours or across a continent if it's Europe or whatever. I want to plan this out, and I want to know, oh, that's the day we're going to go. Oh, we may as well get the tickets.
Yeah.
Or, we want to get the tickets because that's the whole reason we're going.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And people really want to tick things off. They have checklists with their travel plans, and when they can go, yep, tickets done, tick, they're really happy with that. So, yeah, a lot of it for us is like building up a database of people to say, yep, these tickets are now available. Which is sort of what we did with the NBA release a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And yeah, letting people know, you know, bringing people into our, to our group, to our community, and then letting them know when the big releases come out for their trip. And
one of the things that I was sort of talking to you about, and when I did a keynote with the guys at Country Basketball Victoria, was the opportunity for you guys to tap into, I guess, existing networks and clubs and associations, or trying to figure out where these travelers might be.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
You know, so one of the things was, you know, talking to the associations that have hundreds of kids and people playing basketball every week to say, How can they, you know, put your brand in that space?
100%. Yeah, and they're absolutely an example of people falling into that first category of, we know they're sports fans, we know they're interested in it.
Yep.
No doubt they've got an interest in Sports RAM. When can they, you know, when they go on a trip, we've got to make sure that we're front of mind.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that partnership sort of options that are sort of in front of you. What are some of the future plans? Because, you know, a startup's always evolving, and you want to, you know, expand your offerings and those kind of things. What are the kind of things you're looking to do in the next 12 to 18 months?
So from a improving the – there's three different categories that we're always trying to improve, basically. Yep. So the first is coverage. So yep. We're just trying to get to as many different places around the world as possible.
Yep.
We really would want – even if it's a game of marbles, we'd love to cover it on Sports Where I Am.
Yep.
So we're really trying to expand that coverage consistently. The second one is the product, which is basically, you know, obviously for us, the website and the mobile app. We've got a number of different improvements that we're trying to do on both those mediums. And then the last one is marketing. So, you know, and then to your point, how are we going to get to those people, and what yep. are the different ways that we can do that? And when I talk about the product, we've got a number of different ways in the next 2 to 6 months
yep.
of those things that will become live.
Yep.
And I think that's all around what we said earlier around if you're a traveler, what are all the different elements that you're trying to coordinate around yep. going to a sporting game? We want to be able to facilitate that on Sports Where I Am.
Yep.
So, you know, if you're going, you're going to need your ticket, you're going to need accommodation, you're going to need potentially, you might want to do a tour of the stadium.
Yep.
All these
so
things.
So just to be able to widen that offer so it's oh, cool, I'm doing that and I can book that and that.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's purely, you know, again, if we're thinking about what our target is, it's that travel occasion and then trying to enable everything that goes into that for
yeah,
someone
but
who's
from
traveling.
A startup point of view, you're just trying to say, well, how can we increase potentially the revenue per customer? And one of the ways of doing that is adding more products potentially into that space.
For sure. Yeah.
Rather
and increasing
than,
the yep. availability.
Yep.
And yes, and then making sure that there's more and more elements to complement the ticket. Because we know that if you're a traveler, there's a lot more that goes into it rather than just purely the ticket.
Yep.
So we want to be able to enable that on Sports Where I Am.
Cool. And is there any for the listeners out there, whether they're working at a sports team or a stadium or running a league or, you know, wanting to drive more, you know, because one of the phrases is cheeks in the seats.
Yeah.
You are putting cheeks in the seats. How could they get involved, or how could they learn more about Sports Where I Am?
Well, we'd love to hear from any of the people from the teams and from the venues. You know, there might be certain ways around it that they've got ideas that we can work with them.
Yep.
You know, we're certainly open to anyone who can see what we're doing and wants to be a part of that. You know,
because you know, the funny thing is when I'm talking to marketing and digital staff, they're all looking at, hey, we're going to develop our audience in these different regions.
I think, yeah, that's the key
so,
point. Yeah,
you know,
I think that's an incremental opportunity, isn't there?
Like, yeah,
I think,
and it's not a matter, you know, it was literally organic and I just threw it to Matt, didn't even tell him, because this is sort of how my conversations with Matt and Ben go. But the idea is if they're developing these international audiences and that kind of thing,
yeah,
it does make sense potentially to say, oh, well, guys, if you are coming, here is – you know, our international travel provider
exactly,
type of
yeah.
options and stuff like that.
One thing we haven't touched on much in talking about the timeline of it up until now is majority of the time has been built making the platform suitable for partnerships to plug
yep.
straight into a whole bunch of different you know, avenues for people. Like we've partnered with travel agents and sports teams and stuff like that in the past where it's, you know, we've done the work of, you know, sorting through all the different you know, ticketing.
Yeah, you've built the architecture and the infrastructure
that.
That's there.
Yeah.
It's like, well, how could it be presented in different forms?
Yeah.
And whether it be with partner sites,
yeah.
Yeah, teams or whatever.
And when you said when people are in the travel moment, so we've sort of go, okay, travel agents, people are definitely in the travel moment when they're there. If it's not much effort for the travel agent to add the extra part to their service, it's increased revenue. We'll handle all the you know, the ticketing issues and stuff like that on the other side of that. So, yeah, I think that's another thing we'll aim to keep building in the next 12 months.
One thing I did, I missed and I meant to ask about, Nick Riewoldt, an AFL legend, St Kilda champion, is involved in the business. How did that come about?
So So Adrian's cousin is a guy by the name of Wes Garth, who used to work at Nike.
Yep.
And he had some involvement with Nick at Nike.
Yep.
So I think went to him very early on around, it might have been when we had the first website that we mentioned earlier. Basically we said to him, you know, can we get in front of some people who can give us some social media love?
Yep.
Basically that's all we were sort of looking for at the time. You know, Wes mentioned obviously with his dealings with Nick that he might be interested in something like this, and so we were lucky enough to get an introduction through Wes, we met Nick probably 3 or 4 years ago now, and it's the conversations evolved from that. From that original, it probably took 2 years from that introduction from Wes to then, you know, Nick's now part of the business. That probably evolved over 2 years, I'd say.
Yeah, because it is funny, and talking to, you know, Matthew Pavlich and, you know, another former AFL champ that's sort of involved with multiple businesses. It was one of the questions I posted to him. It's like footballers get pitched, you know, all these ideas, and some it might just be, hey, can you send out a few tweets for us, or how do you be involved? You know, you really, you know, one of his answers was, you know, it's got to be aligned with what you do, you know. And
yeah, absolutely.
You know, Nick has strong ties to the US, you know, marrying an American, and he loves his US sport. So, like, obviously there was a good conversation that he's understood the idea, and you were solving the same problem for him, and so it sort of aligned with what he wanted.
I think that's a really good point. I think people are smart enough to see if it's a genuine connection or if it's just looking like a random plug. So I think, as you said, you know, Nick's got connections to the US. He's really interested in the NFL in particular.
Yep.
So I think people see that as a genuine connection, and it's, you know, it's fantastic. For us, you know, we're incredibly lucky to have someone like him who can help us with awareness and, you know, with his standing and, you know, trust and credibility as in a startup business. Then, you know, he's really helped with that significantly for us.
Yeah, and it's a fine line. Like, looking from the outside in, when you see, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, athletes being part of businesses and leveraging their brand. You know, we're seeing in the States with Kevin Durant and LeBron James and that kind of stuff. And there's probably this misconception of, oh, cool, Nick's part of it. Can he post about it all the time, or every time he's on the TV, can he talk?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it can't work like that, because he's got, you know, there's his brand and those kind of things. So it has to be a nice balance of what he is doing for you and, you know, not spamming the hell out of everybody.
Exactly,
and
that
kind of thing. And so it's a little bit of, well, when we're, you know, when Nick's going to be involved, how do we maximize it? What part, you know, what's the most effective way to use him in that space?
I think what you said is 100%, you know, you don't want to be looking like the message is diluted because it's so constant and often.
Yeah.
Whereas if it fits in with the rest of the marketing mix and it's consistent with what we're doing, then that's the perfect case scenario. So, yeah, I think that's what we've tried to achieve. And, you know, not speaking on Nick's behalf, but you see that's the sort of guy he is anyway.
Yep.
You know, he's not out there. And that's why I think even more so we find ourselves incredibly lucky to be one of those brands that he's involved with.
All right. Well, I'm going to finish off with the Sports Geek Closing Five. And you can answer this either together or separate, being brothers, if I hadn't mentioned that.
It might even be the same,
If I had not mentioned that at the start. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I reckon we went with Dad to Waverley. Princess Park.
Yeah, so Princess Park would have been home of Carlton.
Yeah.
And so you two are both long-suffering Carlton fans.
Yeah.
It's sort of, you know, it's a point of mirth and humour when I catch up on some Mondays.
Yeah, yeah.
So you would have gone out to Princess Park.
Yep. I think it would have been happier times back then. I think we would have probably won more than two games.
I feel like my most vivid memory is the one where the Blues had the light blue M&M's uniform. That's one of the earliest games I remember, but I don't think, like, we were definitely there before then.
No, you would have been there before then.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember, like,
you're talking like early 90s?
Yeah, I think we lived in Bendigo for 5 or 6 years too growing up at one point, so we didn't get to a lot of games.
Well, if you went to a game at the Prince Park in the early 90s, there's every chance I sold you the ticket. I worked at a ticket box.
Really?
It was one of my first sports
jobs. What were you doing there? Are you undercover Collingwood supporter?
No, it was a uni job, and I was in the little box, and it was $250 for kids and $1,250 for an adult.
Oh, right.
Like selling tickets, you know, back and forth, weaving it all back, call back to ticketing. So I worked in the ticketing box at Carlton at Princess Park on match day. You know, when everyone paid cash. And it was $1,250 to go to a game and $250 for a kid. And under five were free.
And so that wasn't enough to sway you over to the Mighty Blues?
No. So you would have, you know, in your travels, sports ram, you would have gone to a few sports events. Do you have a favourite food memory?
Yeah, I've tried quite a lot of exotic in-and-out animal-style type in the US, food in the US, but I've got to say I think my favourite food would be a pie and sauce at the MCG.
Yeah.
I think, I'd have to hand on heart say that would be the...
What about yourself, Ben?
I think there's... I remember being overseas with my wife a few years ago and we're at a Red Sox game and I think I was like hoeing into
it. At Fenway?
At Fenway, yeah. Yep. And really going to town on one of the giant pretzels there.
Yeah.
My wife got a photo of it and it looks like... The photo looks like... Like I've been accused of a crime and it's on the newspaper. Like I'm shocked turning around with a mouthful of pretzel. So I think that being there that day, that trip, the pretzel has a weirdly positive association, even though it's a terrible photo.
We'll try to track down the photo.
Put it on the blog.
Shout out to Steve Connolly at the Red Sox, Fenway Park, one of my favourite stadiums. What's the first app you opened in the morning?
So being in Melbourne, the first thing I look at is the weather, just to see what we've got for the next 2 hours, and then it'll change again after that. I'd say the weather app.
Well, I was going to say Slack because I care about the business more than the weather.
Oh, wow. There's a slap from the brother. So your business, your team, because you're a
– Yep.
We didn't discuss it. You're just a distributed team. The two of you guys are here. And,
There's 15 that are involved. It's a remote. So Slack is a really big communication tool for us. It's a good point. We're constantly
So I check that while Matty's checking the weather.
Okay. Well, you know, you can actually use probably use IFT. Right. If this, then that. You can probably get the weather update sent to Slack.
Sent to Slack. New channel. There we go.
That's Utopia, isn't it?
Is there someone that that you follow, whether it be someone you read or someone you keep an eye on, or that you would tell the podcast listeners to check out?
I really like Simon Sinek.
Yeah.
He's written a lot of good books, and I follow him on LinkedIn, I think, and Instagram.
Which book was the first one of his that you...
I think The Power of the Why. I think he did Starts With Why. I think he did that TED Talk, actually, which sort of I really related to. And then I read the book Leaders Eat Last, I think. I think he's got another one coming out in October.
After checking the weather, of course.
I made sure I could read it outside. I think everything he says is really... great and inspiring. So,
what about yourself, Ben?
I'm going a different angle. There's a guy, Laker Film Room. I think his name's Pete Zayas, and basically just a guy who is a basketball coach, loved the Lakers, started putting together YouTube videos of the plays that they were running and trying to break it down, and then got so many people on his Venmo, Patreon, those sort of things that he got supported. So he's quit his job and now he's actually part of the Lakers media team, and he's on The Athletic and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know. It's a I think it's an inspiring sort of story. The guy just provided something that was valuable and then was able to craft something.
Yeah, we do live
in
a world where you can produce content.
Yeah.
And like you were saying before, from a ticketing, like there's now, you know, we've got all these content providers like news, you know, News Corp and that are trying to figure out how paywalls work, you know, New York Times trying to figure, and that's having some success. But then you've also got this, you know, the Athletic is one, but like, the rise of the single journalists that say, hey, this is what I do. You can subscribe to my newsletter or what. I think there's real opportunity in that space. As they're doing singing next door, like they pay no attention to our on-air sign. Lastly, what social media platform is your MVP? You can either answer that from a point of view of yourself or from Sports Where I Am.
I think Sports Ram wise, Facebook is our number one.
Most of that.
But we are on Instagram and Twitter as well. Mm-hmm. I think personally as well, Facebook, I'm not much of a poster. I'm very much a
lurker.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I guess I check Facebook most days and Instagram.
Yeah, I actually think Instagram's sort of taken over for me. I think Facebook's definitely from the business. We get the most leads through that, and we you know, communicate with our audience best that way. But I actually think Instagram I probably spend the most time on. Just
have you got, because you're Android like me.
Yeah, yeah.
Not on team all over here. Have you turned on the tracking of how much you're using apps?
Yes, I have, the well-being. And then I set it so it starts to – this wind-down mode. So it goes after 9:30 or something like that. It goes black and white and the screen goes like the CPU.
I haven't done that. But the tracking of the apps –
yeah, and it gives you your data. And
we're not far away from, you know, you've hit an hour and a half on Instagram and your phone starts shocking you.
I don't think we're
that far away from that. That would be true well-being.
I don't like the one where it's like, it's Saturday night and I'll open my phone and be like, all right, Ben, it's Saturday night. Here's Uber Eats. Yeah, I know what you're up to. That's probably overstepping the line, machine intelligence is getting too smart.
Yeah, yeah. So where can people connect, follow you, with you personally and Sports Where I Am? What about, start with you, Ben?
Yeah, so I guess starting with Sports Where I Am. So it's Sports Where I Am, all one word, across Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn.
Matt Scully. And in the Sports Geek Nation Slack.
Sports Geek Nation Slack, of course. So that's probably the best from group, my perspective, yeah.
And yourself, Ben?
No, I'm actually not on LinkedIn. I've actually held out this far that I feel like it's a gimmick. So now I'm just sort of writing it out with no LinkedIn. But maybe you delete this from the
So in the outro, I'll say, but Ben felt ashamed. It is now on LinkedIn.
Ben left early.
For Ben. Ben Scully joined LinkedIn afternoon.
Yeah.
Just through the Facebook, through the Sports Where I Am ones, where you can sort of make contact with us.
Well, thank you very much for jumping on the pod.
Thank you.
As I said, go to sportswhereiam.com. You can use this code SportsGeek if you actually want to book a ticket. But yeah, more importantly, if there is if there is conversations that it's like, how can we work together?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, either reach out to me or. Matt@sportswhereiam.com.
Yep. Matt.Scully@sportswhereiam.com.
Yep.
Matt will also work, I think.
Yeah. So send an email, contact us. Because I think there's a lot of interest. Like, I think you've got a really good consumer travel business, that piece. But I think there's going to be lots of opportunities in that partner.
For sure.
How you integrate with partners, whether that be travel or sports and where that fits, or media, and say, hey, this is where we fit. I think that's where there's going to be lots of upside in the next couple of years.
For sure.
I look forward to seeing how it goes.
No, thanks very much.
Yeah,
and
thanks
thank you for
Sean.
Your continued help too. Two offices down.
Absolutely.
We really appreciate it.
All right. Cheers.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following Sports Geek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to
Matt Scully and Ben Scully. And be sure to connect with Matt on LinkedIn. And hopefully Ben is on LinkedIn. I will be admonishing him regularly until he is on LinkedIn, or ask them a question on the Sports Geek Nation Slack channels. You can send Matt an email, mattscully@sportswhereiam.com. And as you sort of said, some of the most interesting conversations I've had with Matt and Ben is understanding how their product and how their offering and how their infrastructure can connect with the sports industry, because I think there is some real opportunities for them to partner with teams and leagues and venues to help potentially put more cheeks in the seats, which is something I've said before. And if you're just a consumer, if you just want to find a way to get tickets, if you're listening and you go, oh, you do want to go to an event, you can use the code SportsGeek, all uppercase, one word, for 10% off your purchase. It's the kind of value I like to bring. A couple of things just before I wrap up. Sports Geek Nation is starting to ramp up some of the different content ideas. So we are starting the Reddit-style Ask AMAs, the Ask Me Anything. And really pleased to announce that we've got four people lined up for September. Tim Baker from Adelaide United is currently underway. So that kicked off this morning. So if you've got a question, jump into the Sports Geeks Nation Slack community, into the AMA channel,
and asked him a question about the A-League, graphic design. He's also a podcaster, what he might be thinking about that space. Ask him a question, really looking forward to seeing what questions are asked and also getting some of the knowledge of the members of the Sports Geek Nation community. Also scheduled for September, Alistair Hogg, who works for the ICC out of Dubai. So it'd be good to get a global view of his experience working overseas, what the Dubai market's like and those kind of things. You can ask him about rugby, Dubai, working Dubai, cricket, his beloved Dodgers. I'm sure he'd be happy to talk about that. Liam Murphy from Calisthenics Victoria. He's new to the world of sports, coming from a corporate world. So he's got a lot to bring to the table, and asking him about moving into the world of sports and what it's like to be a CEO of a state organising body in Calisthenics. And then wrapping up September will be good friend of mine, a friend of the pod, and he will be coming on the pod sometime. I keep tapping him on the shoulder for that. Andrew Walton, who was formerly with Interact Sport, and now he's at Empower MSL, working in the golf sector. A vast amount of experience Andrew has in the sports business space through his work in Interact Sport, with working with multiple sporting orgs, and also a strong passion for cricket, being a cricket coach and doing a lot of work and coaching in India. So they will all be available. They'll be scheduled at different times, obviously being global global community. Ways you can get involved. The Facebook group has Facebook events in it to remind you when the AMAs will start. Expect the questions to come in over maybe a 24-hour period as people log on at different time zones. So please, around those times, please jump into the AMA channel and ask a question. We now have a members area on sportsgeeknation.com, so you can go to sportsgeeknation.com/members area. There will be unlocked posts there for general consumption, like the AMA schedule, and then there will be locked content strictly for Sports Geek Nation members. So you just simply log in with your memberful account, and those accounts will be, those posts will be unlocked. And so some of the locked content will be the full replay, effectively, of, and the archive of the AMAs, as an example of some of the content that we're going to do. So especially Tim, Alistair, Liam, Andrew, thank you very much for putting your hands up to be the first people to be part of AMAs. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens, seeing what type of questions, and seeing how the, I guess, the content piece evolves. I don't think we're going to be so strict to say only the guests will be the ones answering. I'm sure it'll trigger and spark a bunch of different conversations, which is what the whole idea of Sports Geek Nation, especially the Slack community, is. I guess last thing, last week I went to a really good conference called Above All Human, run by Startup Victoria, who are also neighbours at Creative Cubes. They are just a couple more doors down from the boys at Sports Where I Am. So Above All Human was a conference around startups and what they're doing in Victoria, and I guess some of the challenges and opportunities. Really broad range of people that turned up. Good to see some familiar faces there. I really did enjoy Irene. I'm going to say Au. That's AU. And apologies, Irene, for not knowing exactly how to say her name. But I really enjoyed her presentation on design. And one of her quotes that I liked, I did post it on Twitter and Instagram, is talking about good design. Good design is like a refrigerator. When it works, no one notices. When it doesn't, it stinks. It was one of my cool takeaways from the conference. But then also just I really enjoyed the conversations that were happening around the conference as much as the content that was being presented on stage. So thank you very much to Sid and the Startup Victoria, and Gus from Vic Uni for inviting me along. Really enjoyed it. One of the key, checking out all the different startup booths, one of the key booths that I
was really interested in is the guys at Neura Headphones. So it's Neura, N-U-R-A. They're a startup based out of Brunswick, which is a little bit north of where I am sitting right now in Richmond, Victoria. And they developed the Neura Headphones, which they're sort of saying a personalised headphone experience. And so they had a really good booth testing it out. And to give you the experience, because it's a really hard thing as I stammer my way through this, it's a really hard thing to explain without actually testing it. So I'm going to do my best to test it. And apologies to Luke and the team there if I completely butcher it. But here's my experience with the Neura headphones. So initially you put the headphones in and there is some technology that sends a sound that hits your eardrum. And again, probably more technical terms, goes back and starts understanding how you best hear things. So you do a little bit of a test. It connects to the app via Bluetooth to understand, oh, well, this is how you listen. And so my best example or explanation of this is the Yanni Laurel, what did you hear type of thing. Obviously, people with different hear different things and hear different registers at a different way. And so what the guys at Neura have done is it's a combination of hardware and software to detect how your ear listens, and then it customizes the sound that's coming out of the earbuds to give you a better hearing experience. And so you literally, it comes back with a diagram of what your hearing experience looks like, and then customizes, and it really works in its best mode for music. And so it has this mode, immersion mode, where you can pretend you're at the front row of a concert. Let's say it's a Foo Fighters concert, or at the back, and it changes the treble, the bass, and that kind of thing. So it really is amazing, especially when you turn it on, and you turn on the personalized experience, and you turn on the non-personalized experience. You can really tell the difference in audio. It really is making me not want to use other headphones that I do have, so it's a really strange mix. So the way I've been describing it is in the same what Tesla does for cars, and the fact that they keep upgrading, that's what Neura are trying to do for headphones. Because it's got software both to be able to update the headphone and the app, since they've done their initial release, which they did on Kickstarter, they've been able to add and improve the product since it's been out. So it's not a matter of, in the same way that Tesla keeps upgrading its car, because from a software point of view, so they've done added pieces along the way, like social mode. If you're listening to a music and someone's talking to you, you can simply tap the headphone and the microphone picks up what they're talking while you're still with the headphones on. Those kind of things have been added along the way. So what is it? I've had them for a week. I really like them. I thought I would share, I guess, the experience. And if you're into it, your audio, you listen to a podcast, you must be in some form, but especially if you're music people. I'm not a big listener of music, but I do completely notice the difference. I think the other big test is when you're doing the demo. When I was doing the demo, was listening on someone else's personal profile, and it really does jar. It really is quite amazing. So you can check it out. There's actually I've actually got a referral code as someone who's just bought some headphones. If you go to sportsgeekhq.com/Neura, N-U-R-A, or if you can't remember how to spell it, you can go to sportsgeekhq.com/headphones, and my friend discount will be passed on to you. You can get 20% off. But if you've got any questions, let me know. I'm happy to talk to you about them. Like I said, I really do like them. So that's it for this episode. Thanks again to Matt and Ben Scully from sportswhereiam.com. Thanks to the guys at Above All Human, and also thanks to the guys from Neura Headphones. I'm really enjoying them so far. Until next time, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callanan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.